The following program contains subject matter that some audience members may find disturbing or inappropriate. Listener discretion and parental guidance are strongly advised. The views expressed are solely those of the participants of the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff or management of KTEP, the University of Texas at El Paso, or the UT Board of Regents. Welcome back to another edition of El Paso Primetime. And with us this afternoon, Dr. Kiran Shokar and Maria Chaparro. They're from Texas Tech University's Health Sciences Centers. And there's a certain department and a program that you need to know about, one called Acción. And first off, ladies, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Thank you.
One of the things that needs to be talked about, and it's such a delicate thing nowadays, and yet not, is colorectal exams. It's that month where we look at colorectal exams. It's awareness. And one of the things that I think our audience doesn't really take to is talking about it in public. But it's a necessary thing that needs to be taken care of.
Yes, that's very much the case. Colon cancer or colorectal cancer, it's the same thing, is a cancer that's very common in the U.S. It's about 150,000 cases are diagnosed every year in the U.S., 10,000 in Texas. New cases, and almost 50,000 people die every year from colon cancer in the U.S. and about 4,000 in Texas. And it affects us here in our county as well. But it's a cancer that's not really talked about. People don't feel comfortable talking about their colon and their bowel movements. It's not, you know, it's not an easy subject to talk about. We've made a lot of progress in the last 20 or 30 years in being able to talk about breast cancer. You know, it's a word that we can say in public without being embarrassed. And we need to do the same for colon cancer because it's a cancer that affects everybody. It can affect anyone.
It's also a cancer that is much more readily treatable if caught early than most other cancers.
Yes, that's very much the case. If you diagnose colorectal cancer early, in its very early stages, then you have a 90% chance of surviving 5 years. If you diagnose it late, in the later stages, then that chance drops to 10%. The other thing that's unique about colorectal cancer is that you can actually prevent it. You can't say that about many of the other cancers. Usually, by the time you can detect it with the medical tests that we have, it's already started. But colorectal cancer is different because you can detect it before it even develops, and that's because of the way that the cancer develops. Usually what happens is inside the colon, on the path to becoming cancer, what happens first is you get little pieces of tissue that are like skin tags that you might get on your skin. And they occur on the inside of the colon. And some of those, over time, go on to develop cancer. So some of those, over time, go on to develop into cancer. The thing is, though, that you can see those polyps or you can detect them with tests. And if you remove them, then you remove the chance of that turning into cancer so you can prevent it. So it's one of the cancers that's highly preventable if you do the test when you don't have symptoms.
Let's talk a little bit, well, talk a lot about this program called Acción against colorectal cancer in our neighborhoods.
Okay, so this is a program that's funded through the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas. In 2007, Texas residents voted to approve bonds that would set aside $3 billion over 10 years to fund cancer research and prevention in Texas. So this is part of that. We've had the grant for about a year and a half. It's for almost $3 million, and the purpose of the grant is to increase community awareness and education about colorectal cancer, and also to provide free testing and diagnostic testing as well for people that qualify. And we're focusing on people that are uninsured, because they don't have access to these tests. Some of these tests are really expensive. So we have created a network. We're working with many, many community partners. It's a really great example of how to collaborate with different kinds of communities. So I'm at a university, so we're collaborating with two other universities, with Texas A&M, the Colonias programs, and with the School of Public Health. But in addition to that, we're really reaching out to the community. So we're going out to housing authority sites, Many of the churches are partnering with us so that we can make this program available to their congregations. And we're going to senior centers. We're going to the YMCAs. We're going to the YWCAs. Many, many places, and we're adding new partners all the time. We're going to the Baptist Clinic. We're going to other clinics that take care of patients that do not have insurance so that we can really get the word out about colon cancer in these populations. And we can also provide free testing and to make it available to as many people as possible.
Do you find it, as you look into the upper demographics, 60 and above, where people are retiring, but they're retiring from jobs where they lose their health benefits and now are kind of fearful to try to even find out whether or not they have some kind of an affliction or even to get tested. They're more reluctant to try out for something like this?
I think there are barriers. Lack of insurance is a big barrier. People who are, busy trying to just make ends meet and get enough food on the table and get all their expenses taken care of, naturally their health often suffers because they aren't able to give it enough priority. So this is a way to try and kind of help alleviate that a little bit with the testing and support. It's more than just the testing and the education. We provide navigation. If someone's diagnosed with cancer, we help them to navigate the medical system and to help find them resources so that can help to offset the cost. But the thing that this program really does is if you go through it and you get tested and it's normal, it gives you peace of mind that certainly in the near future, the chances of you getting colorectal cancer are not very high.
How do people find out if they qualify for this program?
So we have a process for determining if you qualify for the program. But basically, it's if you're 50 to 75 years of age, if you're a resident of Texas, we don't ask for proof of residency. We just ask you if you have an address in Texas. If you haven't had testing for colorectal cancer and if you don't have symptoms, the only symptom we really ask about is blood in your bowel movement that you've seen. And so if you meet those criteria, then you qualify for the test. And then we have 5 promotoras that are out in the community educating people. So they go through some paperwork to make – they ask you some more medical questions and stuff like that just to get a better feel for your medical history. And then but those are the main criteria. So as long as you're uninsured, live in Texas – and are due for a colorectal cancer screening test, then you pretty much qualify.
One of the things that I remember reading a long time ago, right around the time that Farrah Fawcett passed away from rectal cancer, was that when you have symptoms, a number of symptoms that lead you to finally get that colorectal exam, that it may be in a different stage than early.
Mm-hmm.
Because the symptoms are now starting to show up.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of symptoms would people start to have to look at seriously once this thing kicks in?
Okay, so the first thing is that most people with colorectal cancer will not get symptoms till it's very late. It depends exactly where the cancer is in the colon. If it's further away from the rectum, then the symptoms don't present till later. If it's closer to the rectum, then the cancer bleeds and people see the bleeding. And, of course, they're scared and they go and see their doctor. But most cases, there aren't symptoms. So the symptoms you might get later on are they can be bleeding. You can have a change in your bowel habit. And what that means is that your regular pattern of bowel movements changes over a prolonged period of time. So if you went once a day, now you're going every other day and it's been going on for 3 weeks or more. Or if you used to go twice a day, now you're only going once a day. So it can be more frequent or less frequent, but there's some change in that and also in the consistency of the bowel movement as well. So we're not talking about acute illnesses where you have a tummy bug and you have diarrhea or, you're constipated for a couple of days and then you're back to normal. It's over a longer period of time. So that's one symptom. Some other symptoms are you may notice some weight loss or appetite changes. You may feel tired. You may notice a stomach ache or some kinds of pains in your abdomen. So those are some of the kinds of symptoms that you might get. But as you can tell, probably from your own experience, these symptoms can happen in lots of different diseases. That's why sometimes it's very difficult to tell if someone, you know, if I was not a physician, I would not be able to tell if this was an important symptom or if it wasn't. So that's why it's really important when you do get symptoms like that, that you go and see your doctor. But like I said earlier, most cancers early on, there are no symptoms. That's why getting screened is really important. And screening is a concept that people don't necessarily understand, even some doctors. What screening means is that you're looking for a disease in a person that has no symptoms. So it's not that someone came with bleeding and then we're doing a test. That's not screening. That's diagnosing their problem. So screening is you feel perfectly well and you don't have any symptoms, and you're going to go and have a test. And so screening for colorectal cancer is recommended between 50 and 75. And the reason is because there have been large studies and scientific evidence that if you screen that population that does not have any symptoms and they get the follow-up testing that they need, you can prevent colorectal cancer. You save lives, and you diagnose it earlier. And, you know, we were talking earlier about the polyps. You see polyps, they get removed. And so the person, you actually prevented a cancer. So that's why it's one of the most common cancers that you can screen for. The other ones are breast and cervical cancer. Prostate cancer used to be, but now it's not recommended. But so there's really good evidence that if you go through a screening program, that it's going to benefit the population, and because it's going to prevent cancers and find them earlier when they're treatable.
As an investigator, does it surprise you that colorectal cancer is the second leading killer?
If you look at some of the estimates that if everybody got screened who was eligible for screened, you could really cut death rates down more than half from colon cancer. So I've been working in this area for over 10 years, and screening rates have gone up when I first started to now, but they're still around 50 to 60%. And if you compare that with something like breast cancer screening or cervical cancer screening, which is in the high 80s and 90s. So about half the population that's eligible to be screened and should be screened is not getting screened. So it's really a missed opportunity. And I think it all comes down to, in terms of the evidence for screening, it's newer than for cervical cancer or breast cancer. So it just takes time to really, for the word to get out in the community. And, you know, it's not helped by the fact that it's kind of an unsavory topic. We don't talk about our colons. We don't talk about our bowel movements in public. It's not polite conversation. So we really need to break down those cultural barriers and acceptability so it is okay to talk about it.
I was wondering about that sort of thing, how we're going to break a barrier like that. I mean, just recently we're starting to finally talk about prostate cancer. Just recently, we're starting to talk about uterine and cervical cancers and breast cancer. So when we start talking in terms of just language in a casual situation, I mean, how do we break that barrier like almost immediately?
I think that one of the ways is to just have more people out there talking about it like you are now with me. So that people become more exposed to the words and the concepts and, you know, write about it. And, you know, things like celebrity endorsements help a lot as well. I know locally that's helped with the Estela Casas talking about her thyroid cancer. And then nationally with colorectal cancer, there have been a number of celebrities that have come out and talked about the cancer. So I think we need to engage in that process more than we have done. And, you know, I think professionals, health professionals need to talk about that too. You know, we do a good job of talking about those things one-on-one with a patient in right. the room, in private. But I don't think we do as good a job of, you know, in public fora or in the media to talk about these kinds of things in a way that patients can relate to what we're saying and understand what we're saying without using those really highly technical words. We really need to do a better job of using the words, everyday words that everybody uses.
The language is certainly one thing, but the outreach is more important, I think. And with that said, how do they contact you for any of the information here, including how to see if they qualify for Acción?
Okay, so we have a designated phone line. The number is 745-4496. We also have a website. And some of our partnering, all of our partnering organizations are listed on our website. So if you go there, you can find out when our promotoras are going to be there next. But if you call and leave a message, we always call everybody back. And the promotoras will go out to the community to where you are, or they'll arrange for a place to meet where they can see if you qualify and deliver the education. And the education is also a really great program that we developed here. It's developed in Spanish, translated into English. And it's a 15-minute educational video where we follow a typical couple, a husband and wife, you know, just over the age of 50, and they find out that they're, a friend of theirs has just been diagnosed with colorectal cancer. So you kind of see their journey into learning about colon cancer and why hadn't they heard about it, why hadn't their doctor tested them, and then you follow them going through a doctor visit, and we show a colonoscopy, and we show all the different tests that are available for colon cancer screening to try and get people more comfortable with the process.
That's Dr. Navkaran Shokhar talking about colorectal cancer and a program called Acción Against Colorectal Cancer in Our Neighborhoods through the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. If you need information, it'll be up on our website soon under ktep.org and El Paso Primetime. This conversation about colorectal cancer continues next week on the next edition of El Paso Primetime. Right now, it's time to turn our attention towards a fundraiser for a church with a congregation, but that has no permanent home. With us this afternoon is April Perez, and she's one of the spokespeople for the Metropolitan Community Church of El Paso. Welcome.
Thank you, Dennis.
Have a question or two for you, and one of them revolves around the play The Temperamentals.
Sure.
Understand you're coming up on a real nice presentation on this one.
Sure. We're actually hosting the play The Temperamentals, and it's about gay political activism in the 50s, way before Stonewall riots even. It kind of set the precedent and the tone. And it's going to be at the El Paso Playhouse April 18th. At 7 p.m., curtains go up at 8. And all the proceeds we're going to make that night are going to go to building a new church.
The Metropolitan Community Church of El Paso, for the longest time that I can remember, was downtown on Ochoa Street in that beautiful little red brick building. What happened?
Well, we had a last-minute change of plans.
Okay.
There were some unprecedented financial issues that we were not aware of. And we basically just had to move out ASAP. And now we're at Mount Sinai every Sunday at 11.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our new place. That's our temporary home for now.
Temple Mount Sinai has always opened its portals to just about every church who's been displaced, knowing full well that you would be able to move into another set of quarters, if you will.
Right.
Now, the Metropolitan Community Church itself is quite a large community nationwide, and this one is quite important to El Paso. Do you find yourself thinking that yours is one of a vastly growing audience of younger folks moving away from traditional religion into more of a community faith-based service like Metropolitan Community Church?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's really, I personally think it's really important for churches and those kinds of organizations to remain relevant, to try to keep up with the demands and the needs of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And LGBT issues are such a hot topic right now in our country that they are not only accepting, they are affirming of the LGBT community. So I think it's really important, especially in terms of space. The LGBT community has trouble finding a place of belonging. So we try to make it more accessible to open up our doors.
For people who don't understand LGBT, should only look within their own families to find them.
Right.
It's the most amazing thing in the world is all you have to do is just look inside your own family, and I'm sure you'll find a member within.
Oh, absolutely. Or if not in your immediate family, with one of your friends, one of your professors, one of your colleagues. These are not just special rights for special people. These are our peers. It's us.
Mm-hmm.
The vision of the MCC is God's love for all. It's just sticking true to that tradition, unconditional love for all. Not just, well, if you do this or if you believe in this certain way. It's unconditional, no questions asked, come as you are.
Let's talk a little bit about the temperamentals. This is a very interesting and a very, very important play in terms of history.
Absolutely.
The Temperamentals is by John Marenz and directed by Ivan Sandlin.
Right.
From here in El Paso?
Yes.
Okay. If, for those who don't know what the Temperamentals is all about, it goes back into, as April was telling us earlier, it goes back into the 1950s, way far before you got into Stonewall. And it's basically, it's about the Mattachine Society.
Right.
Help me go through this whole thing, because I know in the 1950s, but we're living in the society in the 1950s. That's what this play does. It takes us back to the 1950s.
Right.
And it puts us into a situation where LGBT was so taboo.
There wasn't even a word for homosexual itself in the English language was not even a word till the 30s. This was beyond taboo. This was not real. This was not a reality. You just weren't, even if you were ostracized. You were just ostracized. You didn't exist until the 50s when there were a lot of different scares, like the Red Scare, like you were just mentioning right now about the communists.
Right.
And the same for the LGBT. There were lists. You were blacklisted. There was entrapment, homosexual entrapment.
It was pervasive through Hollywood. It was pervasive in Broadway. It was pervasive in the Midwest, wherever you happen to be.
Right.
That type of ostracization was out there until George Jurgensen became Christine Jurgensen and blew the lid on what is now known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right.
And finally the abolishment of that sort of a thing, so to speak. I mean, it's still there, but
it's still,
you know, it's a little more covert now than it was before. That's what this play is all about, and it takes you into the love affair.
Right. From the founding, two of the founding members, Harry Hay and Rudy Gernreich. And Harry Hay, I was reading an interview with him, and he talked about how because it was so incredibly dangerous to be a gay man in the 50s, he was actually married for a while too, because that's what you did. You didn't have any options. You didn't have any gay bars to go to.
Right.
You had to meet secretly. And so he would go down the streets and be passing things out, be sticking pamphlets in secret places, networking secretly, very, very cautiously. And he started meeting people, rallying people, I guess, and into their secret. The Mattachine Society was an underground society, really.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't. It's not like what we see now, like the MCC, for example. They would never, ever be that open because they couldn't be.
Right.
And he talked about how the cops, at times, because of the Red Scare, because of the fear of conspiracy to the U.S. government, the cops would be suspicious of any, like if there were three cars in your driveway, for example, they would be suspicious and they could go in as they pleased. And that would be their probable cause, right, to search you, to make sure that you weren't meeting.
So this play will be taking place on Thursday, April 18th, but it's not the only thing that's happening at the El Paso Playhouse.
Right.
There's a whole lot more to this fundraiser.
Right. Well, this play will have a few running days after the 18th. But the reason the 18th is so important for us is because all proceeds on tickets, on auction items, on anything else that we're selling during the actual play will go to the MCC. The El Paso Playhouse was generous enough to donate that night to us.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, it was very nice.
And it's a silent
auction.
We're
very lucky.
Very nice. Absolutely. Now, you've got the curtain will go up at 8, but before that you have a silent auction?
Well, before that, we have the silent auction items on display. So you can just roam around and look at them.
Okay.
And there's going to be hors d'oeuvres. There's going to be drinks that were also generously donated to us. But the silent auction is actually during intermission. And those are really nice items that we've all gathered. Dinners and concert tickets, dinner theater tickets, T-shirts, jewelry, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And all of the proceeds will come back to us.
Okay. Now, there are tickets available before the time, and then the tickets are slightly higher priced the day of the show.
Right.
Now, how do people pick up tickets before then?
Well, tickets before then, you can contact Beverly Cotton,
okay,
who is the chairperson of the MCC's fundraiser committee. And you can contact her at cottonbeverlyk@aol.com. Or you could even contact me at aaberes4@miners.utep.edu. And I will get in contact with you. Only because right now we haven't finished printing the tickets.
Okay.
So as soon as we do, we're going to make them available at different locations.
Okay. And for those of you who missed that, that'll be up on our website here shortly. As soon as you finish hearing this program, then it'll be up on our archives under the El Paso Primetime moniker on KTEP.org. April, is there anything else that we need to talk about the fundraising or about the church?
Well, I also wanted to clarify something, that the Temperamentals, the name in itself, was a derogatory slang word in the 50s for gay men, the Temperamentals. So I think it's really important because this is a way of taking back that word, taking back such a negative, derogatory term and empowering themselves through it,
mm-hmm,
reappropriating it, giving it new meaning in a positive way. I think it's really, really crucial, not just important, but essential for LGBT to have a safe place to meet and to be heard,
right,
and know that they're not going to be accosted and know that they're not even going to be judged. It is supposed to be a spiritual haven free from judgment and prejudice. And, you know, though there are a few organizations like this, like the Metropolitan Community Church of El Paso,
mm-hmm,
I think that it is important to be that influence because someone will look at that. There may be a struggling gay, a struggling LGBT youth looking at this example and realizing that they're not alone,
right,
and that they have somebody to talk to, even if their immediate family has ostracized them. Which is often the case, unfortunately.
Understood. Well, for our listeners, once again, The Temperamentals is a play that on Thursday, April 18th at the El Paso Playhouse, it is the night for the Metropolitan Community Church of El Paso. The play is directed by Ivan Sandlin. The play is written by John Marins. It's an interesting way to raise funds for the Metropolitan Community Church of El Paso in order for them to have a permanent place on their own. Right now, you guys are celebrating Mass, or celebrating services, if you will, at Temple Mount Sinai, Sundays at 11 in the morning,
mm-hmm,
and that's all right, are welcome.
Yes, please come join us.
Mikasa Sukasa, anytime you need something, please come by.
Thank you so much, Dennis, and I really appreciate this airtime. You're doing us a huge favor. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening to El Paso Primetime, produced at the studios of KTEP, all rights reserved. Stick around. Coming around the corner is Perspectives with Louis Sines. Have a great St. Paddy's Day weekend.